Mr. Penfold, a travelling draper and haberdasher, a painfully shy man who looked as if he would have been much happier walking backwards, struggled out into the countryside every other Thursday on a massive basketwork tricycle and called on Mrs. Armitage, a war widow, and her daughter Katie. Mr. Penfold, who was in his early 40s, was a single man. He had been calling on Mrs. Armitage and her daughter ever since the war, so long that he had become like one of the family. To the Armitages, who lived at the bottom of a hill in a red brick house surrounded by large clumps of lilac, he had become an institution. "Well, it's Mr. Penfold's day," they said every other Thursday. And then as they heard the tricycle squeak and clump over the grass verge outside the house, "That'll be Mr. Penfold." Finally, when with great timidity and decency Mr. Penfold stepped over the threshold, they'd say, "Well, it's Mr. Penfold," as if he were a stranger turned up from a far country. There was always a cup of tea for him in the Armitage's comfortable living room. In return, Mr. Penfold would carefully and almost religiously lay out his lines. Stockings, knickers, handkerchiefs, ribbons, elastic, buttons, woolen combinations. And there would suddenly hang in the air a smell which, after so many years, had become to symbolize Mr. Penfold. The dry, discreet odor of new drapery. A smell that had become to stand for the grave and timid discretion of a man who appeared to be forever on the verge of folding himself up and putting himself away. Though he didn't notice it, a revolution was going on under his eyes. There was a revolution going on in the young girl, Katie. When Mr. Penfold first began to call on Mrs. Armitage, she'd been a baby in the house, and sometimes he would even take the child on his knee. For some years, there were no changes in the girl that could startle Mr. Penfold. But then one summer, Katie went away to stay with an aunt, and it was 6 weeks before Mr. Penfold saw her again. During this time, there were changes, but to Mr. Penfold unnoticed changes, in the behaviour of Mrs. Armitage. One afternoon, she said that the plums were ripe in the garden. Would he like to see them? He said yes, and in his simple way that had no connection with and didn't understand subtleties, he went into the garden with her. The plums were dark and thick on the high tree, the skins warm in the rich August sunshine. He took off his coat and climbed the long high ladder and found himself in a deep sun-trembling world of fruit and leaves, his basket hooked on a branch, his two hands free for the great bunches of plums that hung everywhere like blue grapes on the brittle branches. After a time, he heard Mrs. Armitage's voice, and looked down and saw her coming up the ladder. It was very warm, and she'd loosened the neck of her dress. She was a neat, firm little woman, with dark brown crinkled hair and a still young figure, and he had only to glance down in order to see the hollow of her breasts opening darkly in her loosened dress. She came up the ladder smiling with slightly parted lips, but he didn't seem to see either her breasts or her smile, and it didn't occur to him that he had only to reach down and she would fall into his life more easily than the plums were falling into his hands. He remained in the plum tree with her for more than 2 hours that afternoon, and at no time did he come near to understanding what had brought and kept him there. A fortnight later, he called again as usual, but when the door opened, he got for the moment the impression that it had been answered by a stranger. This impression was gone almost at once, and he saw that the stranger was Katie. In her absence, Katie had grown up. She stood very erect, her young, newly formed breasts pushing against her frock, and it seemed to him that she looked at him with eyes that had in them a kind of sulky hostility. But that afternoon, he found himself forced to face the change in the girl in other ways. It was time, Mrs. Armitage said, that Katie wore some sort of support. There was nothing like it, she always held, for starting a good figure. Besides, she's going to leave school and start to work.
Work? Mr. Penfold said.
She's going to work down in Denton, in Chapman's office. She starts next week.
Well, Mr. Penfold said, it doesn't seem 5 minutes since she was a baby.
He turned hurriedly to the things on the table and was immediately faced with a new problem. It was very rare that he carried such lines as belts or brassiers, and in fact corsetry was rather out of his line, and he knew that he had nothing suitable for the girl.
But I could run the tape round her and bring some over special tomorrow.
Well, that would do as well, Mrs. Armitage said. Katie, let Mr. Penfold run the tape over you. Mr. Penfold produced the tape measure from his pocket and unrolled it in his hands. But before he could do anything, the girl sprung away from the dresser and went swiftly out of the room.
"Well," Mrs. Armitage said, "that's how she's been ever since she got back. Too big to be spoken to, too big for anything. And now throwing her weight about."
The girl didn't come into the room again, and later Mr. Penfold took away with him the startling impression of her sudden transition, and the still more startling impression of her exit from the room. Whenever he thought of the two things, he was filled with a sense of her beauty and rebellion. When he called at the house again a fortnight later, Katie wasn't there. Mrs. Armitage looked at the clock on the mantelpiece and said, "She'll be here shortly. She gets home about 5:30, sometimes 6.
"Does she like it?"
"You better ask her," Mrs. Armitage said. "I can't get a word out of her whether she likes it or not. She's got that proud she won't tell you anything."
And then, about 30 minutes later, he heard the door open and shut, and the footsteps of the girl going upstairs.
"That's her," Mrs. Armitage said. "One time a day you couldn't horsewhip her into washing her hands before she sat down to table. Now she finicks about with them for hours."
Once again, Mr. Penfold didn't say anything. He lingered over his tea with even more diffidence than usual, partly because the egg that Mrs. Armitage had set before him seemed suddenly distasteful, partly because he wanted to remain in the room until the girl herself came down. The cup was actually at his lips when the girl came in, proud and silent and very soft-moving, so that she slipped into her chair opposite him as soundlessly as a soft, blonde cat. He bade her good evening, the tea still cold on his lips, and she answered him in a low voice. He saw at once that she had grown still more, and that the transition from childhood to adolescence, just begun when he had seen her last, was now complete. Every movement and lack of movement now was mutinous with the self-conscious sense of her own beauty. A moment later, he got up from the table and made some excuse about going. He knew that he couldn't sit there at the table with the girl any longer without something happening, something momentous or foolish, or even to his way of thinking, something terrible. It wasn't until 3 years later that he suddenly found himself alone with her one evening. He had been held up by a puncture 3 miles away late in the afternoon and had mended it himself on the roadside. It was almost 7 o'clock when he got to the house. He knocked shyly on the door as usual and waited, and it was the girl herself who came in answer.
"Oh, it's Mr. Penfold," she said. "Come in."
He went into the house. It was November, and the milk-globed lamp was alight on the table. The light shone upward into the girl's blonde face and on her bright blue jumper, and on her bare, smooth arms and hands. But it wasn't only the beauty of her body in the milky lamplight that struck him. There was something else. There was a change in her voice and manner. A moment later he knew the reason.
"Is your mother in?" he said.
"No," the girl said. "She thought you couldn't be coming. She waited till 6, and now she's gone down to the village."
Her voice was amazingly friendly and free of all the old mutinous reserve. He had no time to understand it before, in a warm, eager way, she asked him if he would like some tea. He excused himself by saying it was too late,
but she said no, her place had been left for him, and all she had to do was boil the kettle.
It wasn't until they were drinking tea together that it all began to come out, as if she had waited for a long time for a moment like this. She began to talk in a rapid, emotional voice, telling him her troubles. She'd been at work for 3 years now, and she was still being carried about by her mother. She worked with other girls who had freedom, took some part of their wages as a right, and had fun in the evenings. She had no money and no fun. All of her money went back to her mother, to be doled back in sixpences when she asked for it, to be sparingly saved in a penny bank, and once saved, never touched again. All that the girl asked was a little freedom, some fun, a dance or two, an evening out once in a while. "That's all I want," she said passionately. "That's all I want. I want fun. That's all." Mr. Penfold looked down at her and saw that she was crying. He let her cry for a few moments and then put his hands lightly on her shoulders. She didn't move, but cried quietly and immovably into her hands. At last he gently moved his hands across her shoulders and partially embraced her. They were sitting like this when Mrs. Armitage suddenly burst into the room, almost as if she had been standing outside in the kitchen, listening. Mr. Penfold hastily sat back in his chair and said that Katie was getting him some tea.
"Funny way of getting tea," Mrs. Armitage said.
He went away shortly afterwards without speaking again to the girl, and without another word being said about her or about what Mrs. Armitage had seen. But when he called a fortnight later, he knew that something had happened. That day he purposely changed his route, not arriving till 6 o'clock. But the girl wasn't there, and it seemed to him that the atmosphere of the house was strange. "Where's Katie?" he said. She looked at him with frank hostility, and he knew that she was blaming him for something. "Katie?" she said. "Katie started to live in lodgings in Denton. She's been worrying about it long enough, and now she's got her way." She stood with her hat and gloves, waiting for him to go. It was 6 weeks before Mr. Penfold called again. It was a grey January afternoon, not quite dark. The land settled deep in winter. It was Mrs. Armitage who answered his knock, and she said, "Oh, that's Mr. Penfold." She held open the door and he went into the house. As he entered the room, he almost stopped. It seemed to him, just as it had once before, that a strange girl was sitting by the fire. It was Katie. As he came in, she stood up, smiling a little. But before he could speak to her, she went out of the room. "Has Katie come back?" Mr. Penfold said. "I mean, for good." "I don't know what you mean, good," Mrs. Armitage said. "She's come back." "Is anything the matter?" he said. "Matter?" She walked away from him and stood looking bitterly into the fire. "She's going to be married." He stood immovable. He felt deeply and inexpressibly sick at heart. "She's got to be married," she said. "That's all. You might as well know first as last." He stood there for some moments before realizing fully what she'd said. Then he knew that there was nothing he could do or say and went out of the house. It was dark outside, and he lit the lamp of his tricycle. As he rode away, he recalled that in the papers that morning there had been a forecast of rain, and now he could feel it spitting on his face and hands out of the strong, heavy western wind. He rode on for some distance before the gradient of the road made him dismount. He couldn't think clearly, but he knew that behind his lifelong shyness, something terrible was at last preparing to explode and shatter him. He walked heavily, oblivious of the rain. "Oh, my God," he said to himself. "Oh, my God. My God."